Forbes Books presents Sustainable Leadership and Disruptive Growth with David Radlow. Transformation for a new and better world. Here's David.
My guest this week is Harrison Perry. Harrison is a partner and co-founder of Fulcrum Fund, a private equity fund focused on reducing the wealth gap and investment in underserved communities. As much as partner, Ben Carson is an outward iBanker network and an interface. Harrison Perry complements these skills as the chief investment officer and runs the operations day in and day out. Harrison, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay, we are going to focus today on what it takes to run a successful M&A private equity firm. Could you be kind enough to take us through your schooling, what you learned at the University of North Carolina in business, and what was in your mind at that point?
I had a great time at UNC from a learning and friendship perspective, and I think that really did give me the underpinnings for the rest of my life. I was always an entrepreneur and was always interested in business and opportunities to create and build things. And so I was that guy that had the lawn mowing business and pressure washing business when he was in high school, and then, you know, did internships every summer in college, and just had a great time kind of helping to earn money, create things, and build things. And that's what I liked about the business school at Chapel Hill, and was involved in running the business fraternity there and a number of different leadership groups there, and really enjoyed it.
And then you went on. How was Northwestern and Kellogg?
Northwestern's a great school. It's a good balance between rigorous academic and then kind of a multi-curricular effort, good at marketing, good at consulting, finance, etc. And my classmates at Kellogg were really just tremendous lifelong friends to me, and that went into many different directions, whether it was consulting at McKinsey, whether it was nonprofit groups, marketing jobs, etc. And so I really enjoyed the friendship group I built there. And one of the unique things about business school compared to undergrad is it was a lot more about group work. It was a lot more about teams and how you assembled the team for your group projects in school. And so I think one of the main things I learned at Kellogg, actually beyond the academic parts, was how to identify talent amongst my classmates and how to help assemble a really great team that could be very successful in the projects that we undertook. And so I found that that was a good skill set for later business endeavors.
So it's accounting and finance that really makes you tick.
Well, I will say I'm a bit of a numbers guy. So in terms of accounting and finance, it's definitely always been good subjects for me. And I've always enjoyed, in particular, the finance side of those two. And I also like kind of the understanding how businesses work, sort of the entrepreneurial classes and business building classes. Like at Kellogg, we had a number of different real life application courses, and those were some of my favorites.
Go ahead and take us down one of those as an example as to why it was one of your favorites and what you got out of it.
We had a class that was about teams and leadership. And so it was a very kind of broad subject. And there was a couple of former CEOs from Baxter and other large companies that had been very successful taught the class. And we were able to learn from their life experiences. And the big thing that they instilled upon us was really leadership and really leading by example and driving to results. That was my favorite course. And I think one that had a lot of carry forward skill sets to private equity now.
So when you get to Northwestern Kellogg or North Carolina in business, how much was this, as well as I'm going to quote someone who was on the podcast for Jack Derby of the Derby Entrepreneurship Center at Tufts. He says the most important thing is content in context in terms of learning book stuff, but applying it. Did you find that to be true both at North Carolina and Northwestern?
You know, I will say that the business schools nowadays have gotten a lot more astute at providing real life examples. The piece that I did at Northwestern that was the most unique was I was able to do an internship with a former partner from Riverside, and he was able to give me some real life experience in private equity. So during this internship, we helped myself and him to build a new independent sponsor investment private equity firm. And he subsequently launched a full successful fund and everything else. And so that really gave me my first exposure to building a private equity firm. And that was invaluable later, albeit I was working for free in the evenings during business school, which always is a crazy schedule. But that experience was invaluable in terms of later building an independent sponsor and private equity firm to see him go through that, Jeff Gagno, and then build off of that.
Could you please explain an independent sponsor, private equity firm? What does that mean?
Well, essentially, you have two ways of capital raising. One way is for a specific company. And if you raise money for a specific company, that can be referred to as an SPV, like a special purpose vehicle that you've raised money for. And that business can be invested in through directly from investors. And that would be considered an independent sponsor business model, where as opposed to having pre-committed capital, you're raising it company by company. So that was the previous model of the investment model at our firm previously. And then in more recent years, has switched over to a what's called a committed fund, where investors pre-commit to a certain amount of capital. And then that commitment provides the capital base to go out and do a series of investments. And so that's what you typically hear when you refer to a private equity firm, is one that has pre-committed capital.
You got your education at BOA as well and EDG Partners. Could you please take us through and tell us what you learned from them?
Yeah, I think it's important in a career to start with some really strong fundamental training and to have good exposure to a large organization where you can get a lot of experience quickly. And so Bank of America really provided that opportunity for me to learn, to be exposed to a lot of different businesses, to hone my financial skills, to hone my ability to interact in large teams, and to succeed in a very competitive dynamic. And so at Bank of America, I was able to work as an analyst for 3 years and then became an associate in their global corporate investment banking division and the leverage finance portfolio management team. And that was a good experience for me to really see large companies. You know, these were Fortune 500 companies in many cases with public financial statements. So my level involvement in the individual businesses was very low, right? But I was mostly learning the financial skills of how to analyze the financial statements, how to do the financial modeling, and how to really identify strong businesses with great leadership and track their future over time. Then at Capital Source and EDG, I transitioned to smaller businesses where there was an opportunity to have a more direct impact and involvement in the success of the businesses. And that's what I'm really passionate about, is being able to support companies in their growth and being hands-on with involvement with the executive leaders of the companies. So at both Capital Source and EDG, I was able to do that. And in both cases, I continued to work with smaller businesses in the 3 to 10 million of earnings size range, which is where I think there's really great opportunity from an investing perspective.
Could you explain, please, the term leverage finance and what it means and how it's applied?
Yeah, at Bank of America has a huge balance sheet, and Bank of America is in the business of making loans, right? You may be familiar with traditional loans where a single bank makes a single loan to one company, and there's one bank involved and one company. Well, what innovations happened in finance over the years is that nowadays many banks participate in syndicated loan facilities where there could be 3 to 10 banks participating in an individual loan to a company. And so in those cases, you have a lead bank that provides a loan to the business, and then they syndicate out that loan to additional banks. That is what's referred to as leverage finance and syndications. The leverage finance is just a business that has a significant amount of debt that has a reasonable amount of leverage. But syndications and leverage finance together usually means that you have multiple banks participating in a loan.
For young analysts, I've heard reports they attend, for example, from 8 a.m. to 2 a.m. Up to 6-7 days a week with time, perhaps, to go to religious service or around a golf. Is this par for the course, so to speak? And at what time and what level does this end, and what does it matriculate to?
Well, forget about the round of golf if you're in investment banking, I guess. But yes, hopefully you would have time to participate in religious services and so on. But investment banking, which is not what I currently do, but investment banking, where I kind of started my career, you know, that's where you oftentimes see the really intense hours, you know, maybe working from 9 a.m. to midnight or whatever else. And personally, I've been fortunate that in all of my experiences, maybe the higher end of the hours might have been 70 hours a week or 80 hours a week temporarily, but it wasn't the 90 or 100 that you always hear talk of. But in private equity, especially smaller private equity firms in the lower middle market, you tend to have fairly reasonable hours. At our firm, you don't see a lot of late nights and weekends on an average week. But what does happen is everyone's expected to deliver on the timelines of the deals when those deals ramp up. And so when we're busy, we can be really busy, but there's no FaceTime element. So when we're not busy, you know, you can go get that game of golf in or participate in whatever social interest you might have. So yeah, you know, I think it's much more of a get the job done and not unreasonable hours in private equity.
So is there a prerequisite, so to speak, before you get into private equity? Do you need to go to a BCG, so to speak, or other consulting firms, or for that matter, work in investment banking? What's the track, Harrison?
Well, a traditional path to private equity is to go through either investment banking or consulting prior to moving into private equity. But we've seen a trend with a lot of team members coming from other backgrounds because it's very valuable to the investment firm to have professionals that have business building experience, legal experience, et cetera. So with our two of our team members that support me and our partners at the firm, one of them has a legal background and is an attorney and also worked in government contracting, which is one of the sectors that we invest in, so has some sector expertise. And the other worked in marketing and consulting prior to going to business school at Columbia. So, you know, it can be a pretty broad set of backgrounds. I think the main thing is, since these are very in-demand jobs, is really excelling in those backgrounds and bringing a unique value add to the private equity firm and their specific investment area of focus.
Many people enjoy the support of larger organizations that have a hard time transitioning to an entrepreneurial environment to scale. In your situation, you've gone from the very big to the mid-size to now all of a sudden you've got smaller private equity firm and scaling. What advice would you give to be successful and be able to navigate those waters?
The main advice is, I think, to be humble and to be willing to really roll up your sleeves and do the work that needs to be done and focus on execution and focus on the highest priority items and getting those things done and driving hard at those outcomes. You know, I personally love being in a smaller environment where I've got a really close team and where I can be involved in the leadership and the execution of the work that we're accomplishing. And the opportunity for more junior members on the team is also that in a smaller group, they are able to take on a lot more responsibility a lot quicker. And so I think being in a small entrepreneurial organization is fun. It's also, though, more challenging in the sense that you know, you don't have all the IT resources and back office resources and HR resources and so on that you might have at a much larger organization. And so you have to be willing to figure things out, and you can't always expect the formal programs and formal back office management you might get at a bigger firm.
As a recurring theme of this podcast, we've had the great support of family and has propelled your future. Is it true that you actually met Ben Carson because of the relationship both you and your wife and with Ben's wife, Merlin, that her MDs brought you together?
Yes, actually, Ben Jr. and my wives are both doctors, both very talented individuals, and they did introduce us saying, the two of you should be friends. You got such a complimentary personalities and so on. And we were friends, Ben and I, before we ever worked together. And that really set up for a great partnership. The thing that's fun about having such smart wives is they challenge us all the time. And it's pretty hard to impress them, you know? So, you know, you would think that launching an investment firm and building the size of operation that we have would get a lot of credit. And to some degree, it does from the wives, but to another degree, they've always raised the bar with the businesses that they've built and the success that they've had to challenge us to take on the next things in our lives. And so that's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's interesting. Can you take us through the early years going back to your time shared offices and building Enterprise and the predecessor to Fulcrum? How'd you get the friends and family and also family offices to matriculate to institutional investors?
Yeah, you know, I remember when we first started our firm in 2013, we had a shared office space and we had 8 people in one office. So it was a big office, but there was 8 people in one office. And I just remember one of the individuals was always cold and had a heater on. And the rest of us would sit around sweating, trying to figure out why it was so hot when the heater was hidden under the desk. And so it was fun kind of starting off really entrepreneurial like that. Rent expense was sort of a novelty at the time. You know, we were fortunate that a year later, we'd had quite a bit of success and were able to expand with our own offices and such. But I think, you know, being on that kind of 1x2 desk, you know, surrounded by 7 others in that room as we were building our firm, I think really kind of created a humble beginning and made us hungry to work for it in terms of creating the success of our firm since that time and creating a culture that, you know, we would be smart with our costs and so forth. We were able to attract a number of different family office investors initially and then transition over to large institutional investors, you know, now some of the largest investors in the world. And the way in which we were able to do that really was first with the family offices by building relationships and building trust. We first put our own personal money at risk and proved the model. Then we asked family office friends of ours to put their capital behind us. And then we delivered for those family offices. And then we asked larger investors to do the same. So we really proved ourselves at each step of the way and proved the returns at each step of the way. And that takes a lot of discipline to methodically drive returns, methodically make investments, and steadily build relationships. Long-term investor relationships are all about delivering on what you promise and building trust and building the personal relationship around that trust.
Okay, and I have known you, Harrison, to be one hell of a workhorse with a plan of how you're going to take Fulcrum up to the next several years to perhaps the size of your previous firms. Is that correct? Is that how you think? Big goals based upon being an everyday grinder?
That's right. I think we need to execute. We have to look at what are the immediate plans and goals for the next 3 to 6 months, and what do we need to imminently accomplish in terms of finding the next best, the next great deal, finding the next great management team, making the next great investment, growing the companies we've invested in, and so on. So it's always about execution on those immediate goals, but then having in mind the big picture 5, 10, 15 year plan of where we want to go. And so right now we're very focused on lower middle market private equity investing, where we see just a great opportunity, in particular, backing diverse executives and investing in minority businesses. We just see a tremendous opportunity to drive both impact and alpha in the minority business investing space. And so we're very focused there. And we see that there's a tremendous market opportunity and a lack of capital access in the minority business market that creates the opportunity to build a tremendous enterprise of scale at our investment firm that can really bend the curve of the racial wealth gap in our country.
Can you tell us what it's like to be the sole non-minority partner, white, Caucasian, male, at a minority firm? Do they let you stay because you're exceptional talent at grinding, executing, and doing deals, or because of your good looks?
It's probably the good looks. It's a fun group. It's a fun team. And it's been great being part of such a diverse organization. You know, every time I've been part of building a team, I've looked for diverse partners that bring a variety of talents, a variety of backgrounds and experiences. And I think that's what we uniquely have at Fulcrum. And each of our partners and each of our team members has a unique skill set. So as opposed to trying to have a partner group where everyone does everything, we really have some particular areas of skill that we each excel in. And so for me, I'm very strong on investment analysis, like serving as a chief investment officer type for the firm. Also on operations and business leadership for our organization, and on identifying the strategic path for us to grow the company. So those are the areas that I really focus on. And I think my track record and our firm's track record of building strong businesses and driving strong returns over my career and over our firm's history is what's really led to the point where we are now of such great momentum on the business. And the reason why our partners all work together so well is those unique experiences and everyone constantly being focused on returns for our investors.
Thanks for sharing that. All right, hang on, Harrison. We have to take a break, but coming up in the second part of my discussion with Harrison Perry, the partner and co-founder of Fulcrum Fund, Harrison shares Fulcrum's secret sauce.
What we look to do is build organic revenue growth first and foremost, and we start with our own relationships, with having built a deep network of contracting officers of senior relationships at Fortune 500 businesses, where we can introduce our portfolio companies and provide unique access to very strong commercial customer opportunities.
To connect with David, go to davidradlow.com. David's book set, The Principles of Cartel Disruption and Secret Stories of Leadership, Growth, and Innovation, are available wherever books are sold. This has been Sustainable Leadership and Disruptive Growth with David Radlow, a presentation of Forbes Books.